This is a WATD Political Forum on 95.9 WATD, online at 95.9WATD.com. Now, live from Studio B, here's your moderator, WATD's Christine James.
Good evening and welcome to a WATD Political Forum. I'm your moderator, Christine James, and I'm joined by WATD reporter Tom Gorman asking questions. Good evening. This election race is for the 9th District, the Congressional District in Massachusetts. We've got both candidates here in studio. We have the incumbent Democrat, Bill Keating, and the Republican, Dan Sullivan, both here tonight to answer questions. Good evening. Thanks for coming in. Timing you all is our own Charlie Fulmer, and we're joined by media partner, Local Scene PAC TV. Our format is simple. We've asked the candidates to have prepared opening and closing statements ready, no longer than 2 minutes for the open and a 1 minute close, please. Then we have a round of questions from the reporters with answers limited to a minute, then a lightning round where answers are either yes or no or one or two sentences tops. Also, we ask, please try to keep your answers to around a minute. If you consistently go over, ramble, or start to repeat yourself, then you get the bell. And Charlie is timing people, so if you see the green here, we find this works very well. Green means go, yellow means you have 10 seconds, and red means stop. If you're still speaking on stop, it's a slow 5 second countdown, and then the bell. And then if you're still talking, we'll cut the mic. Usually we don't have to go that far, but we know some people really do like to talk, so that's what we do. And of course, when we get to the lightning round, we love to do this because we find pretty much nobody running for office can complete this because it's either a yes or no answer, and yes or no is yes or no. It's not with a, you know, whole explanation, or one or two sentences tops. So that's what we do, and then we go to closing sentence. Then we go to closing statements. What we did earlier was we pulled names out of our official stand-in newsroom koozie to determine order, and we're going to begin our opening statements with Bill Keating. Then we're going to go to Dan Sullivan. We will reverse that order at the end. So good evening. Thank you both for being here, and let's start with Congressman Bill Keating.
Well, thank you very much, Christine. I want to thank WATD and your listeners. You know, this year's a little different than the past years we've done it. Last June, we lost Charlie Matheson, who was a staple of these broadcasts and debates. And he was a real important presence in our district. And he did so much to inform everyone as a Plymouth, member of the town meeting as well as in the region. So he'll be missed. So here we are. We're hoping, that we get towards finally, I think, people, one of the most important elections in our history. You know, I was there on January 6th at the Capitol and realized how core democratic rights and the peaceful transfer of power in jeopardy. But given some of the extremism in Washington these days, our personal rights are also at stake. Social Security, Medicare rights, a woman's right to make her own health care decisions. While tonight's debate will include nationwide issues that we differ on, personal financial issues, economic and health care issues, military and homeland security issues, at the outset, I want to really underscore the emphasis I've had on focusing on local issues. Here's a sampling of some of my successful legislation. Funding for the emergency room expansion at the Beth Israel Deaconess, expanding child care services at the Old Colony YMCA, funding for the Plymouth wastewater treatment, which lessens the discharges into Plymouth Harbor, dredging and jetty work at Green Harbor and Marshfield, the new community and elder center in Pembroke, the Scituate Cedar Point Seawall, the Pine Tree Village Drinking Water Protection in Carver, enhanced emergency communication systems that affect Norwell and Cohasset. And also, we work to save the Coast Guard Station in Scituate, and have always worked and continue to be vigilant on Holtec's effort to dump millions of gallons of contaminated water in the Cape Cod Bay. Hundreds of millions of dollars for the district, just to show that not all politics is local, but in my view, much of it still is.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement from Bill Keating. Now we're going to go to Dan Sullivan, your opening statement.
Hello, I'm Dan Sullivan. This election is not about left versus right. It's not about Democrat versus Republican. It's about right from wrong. It's about the ABCs, affordability, border security, control and illegal migration, and common sense. In his 14 years in Congress, Bill Keating has had one bill passed into law, and that was renaming of a post office. Keating has never voted against any war. He views war as a first resort. He views peace as surrender. In the past 4 years, Keating has voted with with Biden 100% of the time. He voted five times against securing our southern border, allowing the flow of fentanyl. He voted against deporting illegal migrants convicted of murder or sex crimes. He voted against voter ID, even though every European democracy requires voter ID to vote. He voted against protecting our digital online privacy rights, allowing the feds to spy on our personal emails, cell phone calls, text messages without a search warrant or probable cause. Bill approved Biden's waiver of sanctions against Iran, unfreezing billions of dollars so they could fund terrorist groups like Hezbollah and Hamas. He approved the wind turbines off the Cape and the islands without a maintenance schedule or emergency contingency plan in place. Bill is part of the state's one-party rule, where one party controls 100% of our congressional delegation, statewide offices, and 90% of our state legislature. When has any monopoly benefited the majority? Do you like status quo? Do you want more of the same? Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Thank you.
Thank you. That was the opening statement with Dan Sullivan. Now we're going to start with questions. Tom Gorman, questions for the candidates.
Well, the biggest issue we've been hearing about this election season is, of course, illegal migrants. Some local communities are struggling to house them without really any support. What would be your solution to this crisis?
Let's start with Dan.
Well, I think the first thing is that we have to get a handle on who's coming into this country. We just saw in the past week that Canada is pausing its immigration, in part due to the fact that the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, is facing a no-confidence vote. So I think that's the first thing we have to do. We have to vet all of the people that want to enter this country. You know, it's ironic that Massachusetts requires that every dog and cat that comes into this state has to be vetted and vaxxed, but we don't have the same requirement for migrants. So I believe that we have to pause it. The second thing we have to do is we have to reform our asylum system and overhaul our immigration system.
Okay, same question.
I'm going to take
Keating.
A quick second on a fact check. Number one, the one bill I did was for a fallen soldier locally. And I just went through a litany of all the legislation that I did for the district. So if you knew Washington, you'd know that you do legislation in packages, and that's the way you get your legislation through, which I have. And Dan, you've said repeatedly on different shows and things that I voted for the Afghanistan war, that I voted for the Iraq war. I wasn't in office then. That was 10 years before I took office. And
never
that's what you that's what you reported.
I never mentioned it.
Yes, you did. I have it on record. I have a record of that for anyone that's interested. So getting back to the immigration issue, the resolutions that were mentioned were resolutions. They're resolutions. They're the equivalent if someone's having an anniversary or someone's getting retirement, that you congratulate them. They have no effect. But those resolutions were just condemning Joe Biden across on political lines. That's why those things he mentioned, I voted the way I did. Now, the immigration system's broken on both sides. Our office has taken 15 years to help people go through legal immigration. Yet, on the other side...
We're going to continue with this question.
All right.
Did you feel like you got your question answered by either one of these candidates?
Maybe a little bit more information.
Okay, let's go back to Dan. Another minute on that same question. Will you repeat the question?
What more can the government do to help local communities with the migrant crisis?
Well, I think since the federal government created the problem, the federal government owes a responsibility to both the states and the municipalities to pay for that problem. Okay? So we start off by simply vetting who's coming in here, and then we have to fund dollar for dollar. What we're seeing is that federal problems are now becoming town problems. Everything is pushed down to the town level. That's why we've seen Prop 2.5 petition override votes popping up across the Commonwealth, because town school districts are overstrapped and first responder services are overstrapped because they're being inundated with migrants. So it's the responsibility of the federal government to pay for the problem that they created.
Okay. A little more on the same question, Bill Keating.
Well, I mentioned it was broken on both sides. And the other side, I'm glad I have the chance to extend this, is broken as well. Americans should decide who lives in America. And that's the core of any border security bill. The Senate bipartisan security bill did this. The Senate bipartisan security bill took the time that it takes, which is 7 years on average for people seeking asylum. That's why they're here. That's why they stay so long. And cut that to 90 days. They also, among other things, beefed up administration of fentanyl screening with technology and people at the border. Although only one out of every 10 grams of amounts of fentanyl come from the border as opposed to ports, those equipments, those machines are very effective. And we funded not only communities that had funded things in that bill, like Massachusetts, but we also funded that technology and the people to administer it. So it was a bill that two-thirds of the senators supported. It would have had 300 votes in the House, and one person stopped it, Donald Trump, who stopped it for political reasons, and that's why we don't have legislation now.
I want to keep talking about this migration bill, because we've heard this question we have heard in every single political forum we've done this season. And this is, by the way, this is the last one of the season before election night last year. We always traditionally do the 9th congressional district. We even had county commissioners getting people sending and asking the questions. People are just, I feel like they need to see a light at the end of the tunnel and knowing, is there something on the horizon that's going to get control of this? Because I feel that people feel like they're losing control of their communities. That's the question that we're getting. Bill Keating, do you see a light at the end of the tunnel?
I thank you for giving me the chance to expound upon it. Yes, the light at the end of the tunnel is with the federal government. It is with Congress. You don't see the pictures in this national campaign of people in the caravans at the border right now because President Biden took executive action when the Congress, it was clear they weren't going to act, and you're not seeing that. However, the courts can strike that down, as they could have struck it down when Donald Trump did the same thing. Congress has to act. The bipartisan bill takes, people come here because of desperation. They run to the security guards. They run to the border security patrol guards. They don't run away from them. They're claiming asylum. They were aware that it's 7 years on average before they get an answer. So they can stay here during that period hoping things change. That bill that's in the Senate that had two-thirds of the Senate support and would have had majority of the House changes that to 90 days. The incentive is gone. The people won't try to come that way. And people might not be aware of this, but when those asylum claims are adjudicated, 9 out of 10 fail.
Okay. Light at the end of the tunnel. Do you see a light at the end of the tunnel, Dan, or what would your light at the end of the tunnel be if you got into this position?
Sure.
This issue?
Well, you know, there's an old saying, you follow the money. So if you look at this alleged bipartisan border bill, 68% of the funds that were allocated in that bipartisan border bill were going to Ukraine. So it should have been renamed the Ukrainian border bill, not the U.S. border bill. Only 17% of the dollars were allocated to the United States. So that border bill was a misnomer. In terms of people coming here to seek refuge, I would say, what do we say about the Venezuelan prison gangs, the Tren de Aragua that's coming here? Are they coming here for a better life, or are they coming here to exploit Americans? So I believe that there's a fair percentage of people that are coming here that they're bona fide asylum seekers and refugees. But not all. Not all are coming here to pursue the American dream. We have the Border Control that just acknowledged that over 15,000 convicted murderers have come into the United States and over 15,000 convicted rapists as well.
Thank you. Bill, you wanted to respond to the comment about money to Ukraine rather than the border?
Well, Dan, 30 seconds. I understand how things work in Congress with major pieces of legislation. They're packaged. The Ukraine bill was with that. These things get packaged. So you're saying 17%. The money was there that was required for this border bill. And what's interesting is it demonstrated the support in the Senate. It was combined with a bill to help Ukraine in the war because that was going through. And the one thing that stopped it was Donald Trump. And he was obvious about it. He told other senators that they shouldn't support this because it'll take a great political issue away from his campaign. And now we see it in place right here in this debate.
When you both are out campaigning and talking to people who are going to be voting in this election, are you having this as the number one issue, like we're getting the questions here, Dan?
It's either 1A or 1B. I think the affordability crisis in this state might be 1A, but they go hand in glove because the illegal migration is exacerbating the affordability crisis. But to Bill Keating's point, he talks about this is how Washington is done. We package things. This is exactly what's wrong with Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is fixated on these omnibus spending bills. It's as if you wrapped your cable bill into your mortgage bill into your car payment. Who does that? That is foolish. But that's what Washington, D.C. does. I want clean legislation. If we're going to fund a border bill for the U.S., it's a border bill for the U.S. If we're going to fund Ukraine or any other forever war, then we're going to fund that forever war. But as far as wrapping everything into one big omnibus spending bill, that's how we get bad legislation. And I want us to stop passing bad legislation. And that bipartisan bill, if you dug into the dollars and cents, it was a bad bill.
Now, same question, Bill. When you're out campaigning with people, is this the number one or number two issue that you hear?
It's migration. Among the top three issues
okay. That
I hear, yes. And I also hear a great deal of people concerned right now what will happen to our economy, what's going to happen with Project 2025, with what's going to happen when the 100% of the House Minority Leader leadership votes for cuts in Medicare and Social Security. These things are real, and they affect people in their daily lives. They're also concerned about the cost and where our economy is going. And we're moving in the right direction, but 29 Nobel laureate economic experts, nonpartisan, said that the Republicans' plan, Donald Trump's plan for the budget, is going to take our gross national product down, double the amount it was during the financial crisis of 2008 and 2009. Think of the magnitude of that with its tariffs and how that affects. Think about inflation. That's, on average, they've said, is $4,000 a tax on every American's income.
You're listening to a WATD Political Forum. The race is for the 9th Congressional District. We have the incumbent Democrat Bill Keating in studio and his Republican challenger Dan Sullivan. I want to talk a little bit more about this illegal migrants issue, and then we're going to switch topics. With this issue, which has consumed so many people, how long do you think how long do you think this is going to affect the way we live here in the United States? Bill.
Well, I get back to the solution. There is a solution. This was a hard-earned bill. James Lankford, I served with. He's among the two or three most conservative people I've ever served with. He's the author of this bill. And while we were all going back home to our districts, he and Chris Murphy were staying there, working it out. It was hard work. And I never thought they'd get to the point we'd have a resolution of this where so many people were on board with it. It will stop the crisis at the border. It will manage that crisis. It has a safety valve in there to cut things off. And it funds the system for asylum. And you know, another thing that'll benefit from this is the fact that these poor people that are taking their life savings or their family's life savings, going with these caravans or these drug cartels, going through the very dangerous territory with their sexual assaults or anything, this would take them out of trying to be incentivized to even try it. They're not gonna put their life savings on the line to come back and be returned within 90 days. But they take the chance when it's 7 years plus.
Dan, what do you think? Going forward, how long do you think this is going to affect our country?
Well, if you're talking about the migrants at the border, that may be sooner rather than later. If you're talking about the cost that we taxpayers are going to bear, I think it's going to be generations. You know, this is so interesting. So the Democrats break something and then they propose to fix it. We had a policy called Remain in Mexico. It was working. And then when Joe Biden took office, he undid all of Donald Trump's executive orders relating to migration. And so we created this crisis. We created it. The Democrats and the do-nothing Republicans in Congress created this problem, okay? And so it's real simple. Reimpose Remain in Mexico. And you're going to solve that problem, okay? As far as, you know, I know Bill is very fixated on Project 2025. For all your listeners out there, I'd be more concerned about the UN's Agenda 2030, which, by the way, our governor, Maury Healey, has adopted. And as far as experts, okay, Fauci was an expert.
Thank you. Any more questions about the migrant issue?
Just a follow-up about the borders. Yeah. Is there something, any immediate steps the government can take to secure the borders?
Dan Sullivan, let's start with you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think what you can do is you can put the military down on the border, okay? I think, we're importing tons of goods from Mexico, so I think we can leverage our economic trade to help Mexico do its part on its end. I think the first thing we have to do is we have to wean out all of the criminal migrants. And we've seen them. They're infiltrating all the big cities. By the way, I'm a registered nurse. Okay, I work in both a community hospital and I work in a state prison, and I've seen the migrants, especially the criminal migrants, starting to infiltrate the system. So it's real. It's not imagined. It's real. Okay, it's not as bad as in, say, New York or Chicago or other big cities, but over time, it could get worse. So let's stop all the criminal migrants from coming to this country first and foremost, and then let's identify the people that are coming here with honest intentions and good faith. Bring those people in.
Okay, same question, Bill Keating.
Well, right now you're seeing that Joe Biden took an executive order. He waited to see if Congress would act. He finally did it. So the same policy, frankly, that Donald Trump used, absent some of the extreme things he did about separating children from their mothers, but that same policy of containment is there now. So that's why you're not seeing in this election season, you're not seeing those videos of the border. Because it's not, he's used that executive order to stop it the way Trump did. In both instances, that was subject to court review, and it wasn't going to be a long-standing solution. The border, this bipartisan border bill, is that long-time solution. And you know, the numbers cited that we hear, that occurred under at least four terms, four different presidents, Bush, Obama, Trump, and Biden. Those are the terms. And the criminal terms they're using? Under all of them, including Donald Trump. And by the way, people should know this, that the statistics are very clear, that in terms of U.S. crime statistics, Americans have double the rate of violent crime and three times the rate of drug-related crime than these people coming in. Okay. So don't use the scare tactics.
Any other comments about that?
I just want to follow up on that last point.
30 seconds.
Follow up on that last point. So we know that Governor Healey is not prosecuting criminal migrant offenders. She's moving them around. Just unfortunately, what the Catholic Church did with the sex abuse priest, they moved them around. That's what she's doing, right? And so when you look at statistics, if you don't prosecute, if you don't charge a crime, then yeah, statistics look better.
Let me ask you a follow-up then. How do you know she's doing this?
Because the authorities have brought it out. It's been in the public domain. The Boston Globe has written about it. The Boston Herald has written about it. The one was the rape in Rockland, where mm-hmm. that brought the whole story up. There's the story of the rape up in Loyola Lawrence, where that person was taken out of the court system and moved around. Look, Beacon Hill has said she spent $1.8 billion on the illegal migrants and hasn't even told Beacon Hill how she spent the money. There's no transparency at all on Beacon Hill related to migrants.
Okay.
Could I just quickly?
Sure, yeah, 30
seconds. Thank you.
Sure.
By the way, I was the first person to start a grand jury and put the subpoena in Cardinal Law's hands for clergy abuse when I was DA, so I know a little bit about criminal justice. And I also know the governor isn't responsible for that. You're saying Mara Healey should be prosecuting him. She's the governor. It's separation of powers, basic 101 in terms of civics. In terms of paying for that, I'll tell you, she's gone to the Congress. She went to our delegation and said, we need more money for this, and we did. And you know where that money was? It was in that bipartisan Senate bill that Donald Trump stopped. That was money for Massachusetts.
We're actually going to take a quick break now and come back, and then we're going to talk about what's happening overseas. We're listening to a WATD Political Forum, the 9th Congressional District. We'll take a quick break and be back right after this.
Get ready for one of the biggest craft shows of the season in Marshfield on Saturday, November 2nd from 10 to 3. The Marshfield Senior Center will be transformed into a huge craft show with over 72 fantastic crafters. We will have a huge raffle. We will have entertainment Saturday, November 2nd from 10 to 3 at the Marshfield Senior Center, 230 Webster Street in Marshfield.
Hi, I'm Alexis Kuhn with Habitat for Humanity of Greater Plymouth. I'd like to invite you to our Hearts and Hammers Gala happening on Friday, November 1st in Kingston. It's going to be a night full of fun, food, and exciting auctions, all in support of building affordable homes right here on the South Shore. Tickets are still available, but space is limited, so grab yours soon. Don't miss the chance to support families in need. For more info or to buy tickets, please visit hfhplymouth.org. Hope to see you there.
I'm Rob Robison from Cedar Hill Retreat Center in Duxbury. Our second annual benefit speaker features Woods Hole Institute whale expert and researcher, Dr. Michael Moore. He'll be discussing his book, We Are All Whalers, Friday evening, November 8th at 7 p.m. in the Assembly Hall of Duxbury's First Parish Church. For more information and tickets, go to cedarhillcenter.org. First Parish is on Route 3A next to Town Hall in Duxbury. We'll see you on November 8th.
WATD's Political Forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
And we are back in the studio here. Just had a quick break with some Sour Patch Kids with a few people indulged in. And we're back here to talk about the issues with the candidates for the 9th Congressional District. We were talking about illegal migrants beforehand. We're going to switch topics now. We're going to talk about what's happening overseas. Couple of conflicts going on. We've got Ukraine, got what's happening with Israel, Gaza, and now it looks like that involves Lebanon and Iran. Some people are telling me they're afraid we're at the start of World War III. Bill, do you feel like we're in that kind of danger in the United States?
We are in danger here. Vladimir Putin is a direct threat, an enemy of the United States. He took the greatest aggression since World War II. And invaded Ukraine. He made clear, though, in this latest invasion, just before, when he contacted our government with a statement that said he's not just going to stop with Ukraine. He's going to continue with the Baltics, and he wants one half of the NATO countries disarmed. And in Poland, in Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, they're NATO countries. And under Article 5, we have an obligation, as they came to our aid after 9/11, we have an obligation to send our young men and women to war to defend our NATO allies. So this is a potential deployment of U.S. Troops, young men and women, because of Putin's aggression. Ukraine is fighting that war for us. And the money we're giving to them is a bargain compared to what the alternative would be deploying our troops in NATO.
Dandy, with everything going on overseas that we know about right now, do you feel like we're on the verge of World War III?
We are definitely slow walking towards World War III, and I blame the current government for allowing it. Let's go back in history. Back when Germany was reuniting, our Secretary of State, James Baker, went over to the former Soviet Union and made a commitment to Russia and said not one inch eastward. Since the reunification of Germany, 14 European countries have been admitted into NATO, okay? And I appreciate the aggression of Putin, and it must be stopped. But let's also not be naive, okay? Putin has always said he wanted to stop NATO expansion eastward. He drew a line at Ukraine, okay? And then he wanted Ukraine to be like Switzerland. He wanted to be a neutral country. But for whatever reason, we decided to poke the bear. Okay, and we've triggered a war. I understand that Putin started the war, but we triggered the war. And my question is that to what expense? We spent $250 billion so far, and now Bill Keaton, right out of his lips, send your kids into war.
Let's start with Ukraine, then we're going to go to another part of the world. With Ukraine, do you see, a lot of people have described this as a U.S. in a proxy war with Russia. How much longer should we keep funding the war in Ukraine? What's the end game here? And what happens if we don't fund the war in Ukraine?
Well, what I just heard, Christine, was amazing. I just heard Dan say that Putin is the victim here, basically.
Let me answer
my question. He's sitting there saying the U.S. was responsible poking the bear because Putin invaded a sovereign country. It's not what Putin wants. Putin wants Switzerland there. Well, maybe the Ukrainian people in a democracy wanted something else. And so your premise is that Putin decides, which I find astounding, to be honest with you. He doesn't get what he wants. The Ukrainian people get what they want. And it's a democracy. So where do we go from here? Really, Putin is the one that's doing it. I held three hearings that I chaired with these war crimes that Russia is doing. They're horrific. the sexual assaults, the rapes, the torture, the mass killings. This is what Putin is doing to a country that just wanted to be left alone and wanted to move and make its own decisions. So the strength we have in our country, which I get to later, will be our coalition.
Okay. I want to ask you something about poking the bear. Would you kind of go into details of that?
Sure. Well, let's look at history. So the Donbass, right, these are ethnic Russians who speak Russian and identify with Russia. They wanted to join Russia. They wanted to economically align with Russia, okay? And I hear, Bill, please respect. And so it was Ukrainian forces that started to bomb the people in the Donbass, right? But let's fast forward, okay? Zelensky's running around Europe right now with his victory plan, okay? And part of that victory plan is that he wants full NATO membership. He wants to be able to do deep strikes into Russia, okay? He wants to auction off pretty much all the land in Ukraine. And you've got seven NATO countries that said his victory plan is a fantasy list. Look, I just want peace. That's what I want. I want peace, right? I don't want war. I want peace, right? And I think there is a peace solution. I think it's similar to what we had in Czechoslovakia and in Yugoslavia.
Okay. Let me ask you both a question. If, let's say, we cut aid to Ukraine at the end of the year, what's going to happen, Bill Keating? What's going to happen
Russia
in Ukraine?
Russia wins. And by the way, let's set the record clear here. People in the Donbass, people in Ukraine, they didn't want to go to Russia. He invaded them. He took military force and did the horrific things I just said, dealing with that. I don't know where you're getting it. You know, I know there's a lot of propaganda that's being fed to different circles right now in our country that's really something people should be careful of. But not being factual about Putin invading a sovereign country and saying they really wanted Putin to invade them. They really wanted it. That's just the kind of thing that's right out of RT and the GRU propaganda from the Russian intelligence. And it evidently has invaded some of the social media around here, but it's absolutely factually incorrect.
Dan, what's the worst possible scenario? Let's say the U.S. stops aid to Ukraine at the end of the year. What do you think the worst possible scenario would be?
So first of all, are you saying that nobody in eastern Ukraine wants to join Russia? Are you saying nobody in northern Ukraine wants to join Belarus?
Can you just answer the question about what's about the Ukraine?
Ukraine. Well, I'm not sure, but, you know, I believe this. I don't believe Bill Keating's scenario that he's going to want to invade all of Europe. And by the way, I'm not excusing Vladimir Putin at all. No way. He's a bad actor, okay? But you know what? There are bad actors on all sides. He talks about Zelensky. Let's talk about Zelensky. Let's talk about facts, Bill, right? He canceled presidential elections. He banned all political parties. He outlawed the largest and oldest church in Ukraine, okay? Now, that doesn't sound like a small D Democrat to me. That sounds more like an autocrat. So there are bad actors all across Ukraine.
But I want to give you, again, I'll give you 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. Tell me what the worst possible scenario would be if the U.S. cut funding to the war in Ukraine at the end of the year.
Well, obviously, the worst possible scenario is some sort of nuclear engagement, whatever party has it. So that's the worst possible. If we have nuclear engagement, then the world loses. So that is the absolute worst possible scenario. Do I believe that there's a diplomatic solution to be sought? Yes. Do I believe that there's peace to be sought? Yes, I do. But part of the problem is Bill says, oh, I'm full of propaganda or all this propaganda. Our political leaders have got to stop lying to us.
Okay, let's switch conflict zones. Let's go to Israel and Gaza, and now it looks like Iran and Lebanon getting dragged in. What do you think about the situation there? What should the United States policy be towards the Middle East? I mean, that's a lot going on there, but what would you do with this situation?
Well, it's complicated. It's been going on for time immemorial, and it's not going to be fixed overnight. Let's look at what triggered this, October 7th, okay? So I do respect Israel as being the only democracy in the Middle East. I also respect their sovereignty, and I respect their right of self-defense, okay? That being said, in any armed engagement, there has to be a sense of proportionality, okay? And I'm not sure that that proportionality is being respected, okay? We also have to have the return of all the prisoners, all of the people being captive by Hamas. Let's also keep in mind that Joe Biden released funds to Iran, who turned around and did exactly what they said they weren't going to do, and that was to fund Hezbollah and Hamas. It's playing out. We had their money frozen. We had sanctions in place, and Joe Biden, with support of his Democrats, undid that.
Okay. Same question.
The $6 billion that he's talking about never got to Iran, just so you know. Never got there. It's still frozen. It's still not been, and it's really, it's not U.S. giving the money. It's money that the South Koreans paid to Iran. It's neither our money, but we froze it. In any case, the important thing is, you know, we have an obligation and a policy to defend Israel. It's surrounded by countries that want to stop its existence, its very existence, and that's real. October 7th and Hamas brought an escalation to this at a time when we were so close. We were just months away from a major agreement that would have been as larger than the Camp David agreement, basically, that would have provided order in the Middle East. Saudi Arabia and the U.S. were leading that effort. In short, I think there should be a ceasefire. I agree with the administration in that regard right now, a release of the hostage, and there has to be an end game. A two-state solution is part of that end game.
Okay. You're listening to Political Forum here for the 9th Congressional District. We have the incumbent Democrat Bill Keating in studio and his Republican challenger Dan Sullivan. I know, Tom, we were talking a little bit earlier, getting back to local issues, Holtec and Pilgrim. I know you wanted to ask a question about that.
Yes, as you know, Holtec's been wanting to dump millions of gallons of water, radioactive water, into the bay. What are your thoughts about that?
We'll start with you, Bill Keating.
Well, thank you. As I mentioned in my opening statement, that's a priority. Our office found out the fact that in spite of a community meeting in Plymouth that Holtec had, that they had plans within months after the meeting to go ahead with this plan. It was our office that uncovered the fact that was their plan and started, I think, an effort to make sure they didn't move forward on that, something they are still trying to do, by the way, through the courts. The Ocean Sanctuary Act in Massachusetts really was the catalyst for legally putting an end to this, but they are contesting that at this point, and I think they'll be unsuccessful in that regard. In the meantime, there's some of that's evaporating out, and that's a concern, that they're just trying to move with it that way. I said all along, there's an alternative for Holtec, the same they had with the Yankee facility in Vermont, and that is simply to truck it out. It just costs more, and it eats into the profit of the CEO.
Same question, Dan Sullivan, Pilgrim.
It's real simple, not one drop in Plymouth Bay, period, not one drop. And so whatever it takes to prevent them from polluting Cape Cod Bay, Plymouth Bay, and for that matter, Cape Cod Bay, whatever has to be done needs to be done.
Let me ask you both a quick follow-up question. Do you trust Holtec's intentions to do the job right and cleanly, Dan?
No.
They're too motivated on profit to trust them.
Okay. Did you have any follow-up with that? Let's talk about affordability. That's another big issue in the district about affordable housing. I was going to say everybody talks about it, but it doesn't seem like enough's being done. You know, we hear this all the time about young people that can't afford to live here. Starter homes are just, the prices are through the roof. And you hear about small projects being done here and there, but it seems like overall this has become a super, super expensive place for everyone to live. Any ideas on how you would deal with the affordability issue, Dan Sullivan?
Well, from a national perspective, we need to ban private equity, asset managers, and venture capitalists from buying, owning, selling undeveloped residential land or any single-family or multiplex residential properties. Straight-out ban. That's the first thing. On a local level, we've got an issue, and I think it's been misframed. We have an overcrowding problem, not an overpopulation problem. And with our governor abusing the sanctuary state status and abusing the right to shelter law, okay, we've created a magnet for migrants to come into this country that is consuming our housing availability. So we've got an affordability problem, we have an availability problem. And so I think we need to incentivize good faith builders to build in places where it is sustainable, okay? Right now, we're building on top of each other, it's unsustainable.
Okay, same question, Bill Keating. What can we do about the affordability issue? It's become such an expensive place to live at every level, it seems like.
At the federal level, the way it's, we're really the funding apparatus for this. And I've worked hard in the Appropriations Committee to get more money into the home program, get more money into CDBG block grants. Now, CDBG block grants are those monies that we give to municipalities and to states so that they can use it for their own housing decisions, among other things. And they do that in our district, and they've done it well. But it's not sufficient to the housing shortage and the problem. I think the idea that that migrants are coming here, people have no money, buying up these houses. They don't have money. We don't, the average person doesn't have money to purchase these houses. First-time home buyers don't have the money to purchase these houses because of the expense. I think between the grants and what's going to happen, I think, and happening in some parts of my district on zoning issues and things, where they're going to be able to deal with it. One of the things that's important, we have to do investments in wastewater treatment and sewage treatment because that's stopping the availability of the land to build houses on.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break and come back right after this. You're listening to A Political Forum on 95.9 WATD.
Hi, this is Catherine Libretto with Christ Church Episcopal of Plymouth, Massachusetts. On November 8th from 7 to 9 p.m., we'll be hosting a musical coffee house to benefit our Overnights of Hospitality Outreach Program, a winter shelter for the homeless. We'll be accepting donations and selling baked goods, coffee, tea, and hot chocolate. For more information, please visit our website at christchurchplymouth.org. Thanks, and we hope to see you there.
Hi, I'm Kelly with Veterinary Chaplaincy Services. Our mission is to support people after pet loss. If you're looking for support after losing your special companion, please visit our website at veterinarychaplaincy.com or call or text our new warm line at 833-4-VET-CHAP. That's 833-483-8247. 833-483-8247.
I'm Rob Robison from Cedar Hill Retreat Center in Duxbury. Our second annual benefit speaker features Woods Hole Institute whale expert and researcher, Dr. Michael Moore. He'll be discussing his book, We Are All Whalers, Friday evening, November 8th at 7 p.m. in the Assembly Hall of Duxbury's First Parish Church. For more information and tickets, go to cedarhillcenter.org. First Parish is on Route 3A next to Town Hall in Duxbury. We'll see you on November 8th.
WATD's Political Forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
That's right. We are back here in studio having a lively debate here tonight. Both candidates for the 9th Congressional District. And then we've got the incumbent Democrat, Bill Keating, and we have the Republican challenger, Dan Sullivan. Just had a good little interesting conversation during the break. A couple issues that we are going to get to. But first, one of the other issues that's come out during this campaign, reproductive rights for women and abortion. Where do you stand on the issue, Dan?
Okay. So Roe v. Wade was a court decision. It was not an act of legislation. Roe v. Wade was a court decision that sat in place for 51 years. For 51 years, Congress could have acted and codified Roe v. Wade. They chose not to. Okay, Bill Keating's been in Congress for 14 years. He chose not to act on Roe v. Wade. Okay, that being said, I do respect a woman's right to choose. Okay, and I'd like to see us look at what Europe has in place. Every European country has a national abortion law. It's a settled matter. Abortion is a settled matter across the world, except here in the United States. Between 2008 and 2010, Barack Obama enjoyed a supermajority in Congress. He had an opportunity to codify Roe v. Wade when he was looking to pass Obamacare. He opted not to, okay? And here we are, 14, 15 years later, and we're still litigating this issue.
Well, this is one of the differences between Dan and myself. Dan told the New Bedford Light that he's pro-life in every sense of the word. I have voted to allow women to make their own decisions since I've been there. I've voted to codify Roe v. Wade. You know, now, after 50 years of precedent is now gone, we have 50 different states with different laws. 21 of those states have standards less than Roe v. Wade right now. And half of them have standards that amount to a total abortion ban. And we can see that what's happening to so many women in our country. The stories that are coming out, the mortality rate is higher. And I am committed to codifying and voting as I have once. I'll do it again. I'm a co-sponsor of the act to codify Roe v. Wade, as well as to codify IVF care, as well as contraceptive freedom.
Okay. And just to follow up at that point,
30 seconds.
I am a healthcare professional, so I would not want my healthcare professional who was not pro-life. When I say pro-life, Bill, I'm talking about pro-life. That means I'm anti-capital punishment. It means I'm anti-euthanasia. It means I'm anti-eugenics. When I say I'm pro-life in the total sense of the word, it means that I support life. It's my profession. It's my vocation. And that's why I say I am pro-life. That being said, I'm a practical person. And that's why I said, how come you didn't do it then? Why did you wait until Roe v. Wade was voted out?
Now, Dan, you are a healthcare professional, and you did mention this during the break, which we'd had on the list here of questions, too, about affordable health care. The cost of health care is just sky high. What can you do on the federal level to help this issue?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because today, a state Senate leader, and I quote, she says, it's Senator Cindy Friedman, she says, our health care system is incredibly fragile right now. If you look at our hospitals, even historically financially secure ones, all of them are struggling. All of our community health centers are struggling. The cost of health care is just way beyond what anybody ever envisioned, okay? We have a broken healthcare system. Healthcare professionals, we call it not a healthcare system, but a sick care system. It is fundamentally flawed, okay? We've seen two industries grow. One is big pharma, and two is these pharmacy benefit managers. By the way, two of the three largest pharmacy benefit managers are owned by insurance companies. So we have to, again, just like we have to overhaul our immigration system, we need to overhaul our healthcare system, how it's funded and how it's insured.
Okay. Bill Keating, same question. What do we need to do with our healthcare system?
Well, I think we're on a course of managing the best way we can. One thing that has been a great success after years of fighting the lobby, the big pharma, was getting, for Medicare, for elderly people, prescription drug pricing controls. $2,000 out of pocket now will be the new law going into this next year. We reduced the insulin cost to $35. Some people are paying several hundred dollars for that per month. And with the Affordable Care Act, which Dan is not in favor of, and I have been, that is deals with things like pre-existing conditions, and the people are paying into the system where we were paying for it before. I do think that another thing that is different between the two of us, he's criticized me. He would repeal the IRA, which had that cut in the limits on prescription drug pricing. So we're in disagreement there. The leadership and the Republicans, they're sponsoring legislation to cut Medicare.
Would you like 30 seconds to respond to some of that?
Sure. So first of all, I'm not opposed to the Affordable Care Act, if only it was affordable. What we've seen is that overall health care prices have gone up since Affordable Care Act became law. So I'd love to see the Affordable Care Act keep to its promise, which is to make health care more affordable. It's, as we've seen, we're discussing right now, it's less affordable. In terms of the repeal of the prescription drug prices, I'm a nurse. I know that Big Pharma does not have our best interests at heart, right? And so I want Big Pharma. You talk about paying your fair share. I want Big Pharma to pay its fair share.
Question for the candidates. Tom Gorman.
There's concern about the future of Social Security. What can you do to guarantee that the retirees will continue to receive their benefits?
Dan.
Well, Social Security, and for that matter, Medicaid, Medicare, which are the two biggest line item expenses in our federal budget, are both facing potential insolvency by 2031, 2035 by estimates. We're not funding it. We're ignoring it. And it's kind of like parallels back to Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade was sitting out there for 51 years, and Congress did nothing about it. Well, the same thing is happening with Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. It's sitting out there. It's facing insolvency. We have a continuing decline in labor participation, and we need more people to join the workforce to pay the taxes to fund these programs, and we have less and less people that are working. So it has to be a priority, because once we face insolvency, we're going to have the same hysteria that we're facing with other issues that have expired.
Bill Keating, what can we do about Social Security?
First thing, don't make it worse. I'll tell you right now, 100% of the Republican leadership in the House, 80% of the Republican membership in the House are on board for cutting Social Security, cutting Social Security disability, cutting Social Security, and the plan that Donald Trump has brought forward, should he become president, will even go further. It's going to shorten that time frame for the solvency rate. So many of them want to kill Social Security, blow it up, because they think they can start from that. And that's what we're seeing in these extreme positions that are going forward. What can we do for it? I'm co-sponsor of a bill and have been, and we're trying to work to get some bipartisan support on this, to make Social Security more solvent, to make sure there's a cost of living guaranteed, to make sure people can work and are penalized that are on Social Security so they can earn more money. It's good for more jobs and more workers here in the economy. And it will push that solvency rate decades forward. I'm joining with Representative John Larson of Connecticut for this bill.
Okay. Believe it or not, it's time for the lightning round. This has been
I just wanted to follow
up
one thing.
30 seconds.
30 seconds, sure. And that is, I'm not looking to cancel Social Security. I'm not looking to cancel Medicaid, Medicare. I'm looking to expand it. So I know you like to reduce people down to groups, but I'm an individual. I'm a free thinker. And I've got common sense. And I work in healthcare. And I know what I'm talking about, Bill.
Okay, let's go to the lightning.
Just quickly, yeah.
Oh, 30 seconds.
Sometimes you can't have it both ways. You want to cut spending and you want to do this at the same time. We have a plan to fund that, which I could go into detail. But we have a concrete plan to do that.
Okay. I want to cut forever war spending. That's what I want.
Let's go to, tell me, Dan, three qualities that make you the right candidate for this job. And again, in a couple sentences.
Sure. I'm independent-minded, and I've got common sense, and I'm not a career politician. I spent my life working in the real world, so I know what it means to struggle to work two jobs, okay, to work double shifts, to make ends meet.
Okay. Same question. Bill Keating, three qualities that make you the right candidate for the job.
Well, I think I have the experience of actually doing it, and it's very difficult to do it when you're the minority in that. But as a member of the minority, I secured more money for the Cape Cod Bridge, for instance, even though that's a hard thing to do. But I do work across the aisle.
Okay.
I have that ability. And being a former DA, I understand criminal justice issues and those issues.
Quick.
Oh, this is lightning.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Okay.
That was a long lightning.
That could be, yeah.
Okay.
A lightning fest.
What's the last book you read?
Oh, my God. It was on Putin's friends.
Okay. Last book you read, Dan.
Well, I'm still reading it, reading the Bible.
Okay. And what about binge TV? What's the last binge TV something you streamed?
I cut the cord in 2010. I don't watch TV.
Oh, my goodness. You're a better man. I'm afraid
you
to tell you.
You have more free time to live life.
I can imagine. Have you binge-watched anything?
Yeah, I get the real old ones, though. The Breaking Bad, I thought it was hard to stop
okay.
watching Breaking Bad.
And in two sentences, tell me about a hidden talent you have. Two sentences.
Communication with people.
Okay. Hidden talent, Dan.
I'm resilient.
Okay. We're going to go to our closing statements now. It's been a very good, lively discussion. We're going to switch order. We began this one with Bill Keating, and then we went to Dan Sullivan. So we're going to switch it at the end. We're going to begin with Dan Sullivan, then go to Bill Keating. You have 1 minute.
Thank you. This election day, you have a choice, peace or wars, legal migration or open borders for free flow of migrants and fentanyl, affordability or unsustainability. This election isn't about left versus right. It's not about Democrat versus Republican. It's about choosing right over wrong. Instead of taking care of business on the home front, Bill Keaton has been lobbying for war in Europe. He's been missing in action here. This election is about the kind of life you want for yourselves and your family. Are you satisfied with housing, health care, and education costs, or gas, grocery, and utility prices? Are you happy that your children and grandkids may never afford a home, raise a family, or enjoy a retirement, or that they may be forced to fight or die in a forever foreign war? I'm an independent-minded, common-sense, registered nurse. I advise all my patients, everything in moderation, including moderation. Today, we have no moderation in our politics or policies. Unlike Bill Keaton, I will never be a rubber stamp for bad policies, bad laws, or bad actors. I'm Nurse Dan Sullivan, and I ask for your vote for Congress. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the closing statement of Dan Sullivan. Now, closing statement with Bill Keaton.
Well, thank you. I'm very hurt and offended, actually. I come from a Gold Star family. My uncle was killed in action. I saw the hurt of my grandmother, my father, all our family with this loss. The biggest decision we have is to avoid sending young men and women unnecessarily to war. And you'll never see anyone more committed to try and avoid that than me. He was killed defending democracy. And democracy's really at stake right now in this election. And so I guess this is the time of the debate where we ask you for your vote, and I respectfully do that. But I want to promise you one thing. It's something that those who deny Trump lost the last election, who don't respect the peaceful transfer of power, and who believe a strong man is better than a strong democracy. I want to tell them, I will honor your vote. Honor those who vote for me, honor those who vote against me, because without that, this debate means nothing. Without that, your vote means nothing. Without that, our democracy means nothing. So I want to thank everyone. Please vote. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was a closing statement with Bill Keating. This forum will be up online. I want to thank both candidates for coming in studio, made the effort to come here. Great debate tonight. I want to thank the local scene, PAC TV, for streaming this. Tom Gorman asking questions for me, our engineer, Larry Nelson, and our timer over there, Charlie Fulmer. Stay tuned to WATD for complete election coverage. We start at 8 o'clock on election night. We've got a whole political posse in studio. We'll bring you the results as they come in. And remember, if you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Christine James, 95.9 WATD.